The state releases more information on the Juneau Access Road project to include more ferry information. That story and more up next. The state last week released an updated document for the Juneau Access Road project to reflect how new shuttle ferries would be used in the various alternatives for the proposed road. The document that was updated is the Supplemental Environmental Impact Statement for the road project. It details at length the background, scoping alternatives, and cost analysis for a road extension north from Juneau. Alternatives must be included as part of the impact statement required by the federal government. When the State Department of Transportation and Public Facilities first released a version of the impact statement in June of last year, it surprised many Upper Lynn Canal residents to see that the alternatives included the idea of using shuttle ferries between Skagway, Haines, and Juneau, or other proposed ferry terminals to be built further north of Auk Bay along a new road. Then, the state last year announced its plans to change the Alaska-class ferry project from one ferry to two shuttle ferries intended to service the Lynn Canal. The revised alternatives are updates to reflect that new shuttle ferry plan, says DOT spokesperson Jeremy Woodrow.
In essence, the SEIS alternatives that involved the ferry projects just had to be updated to reflect the new Alaska-class ferry project.
There aren't many major noticeable differences in the revised alternatives, except to more clearly explain how the shuttle ferries would operate in each of them. For example, the first alternative is to do nothing or not build a road. The new alternative expands on the first version to detail how the shuttle ferries would work in the same way the ferry plan explains. One ferry would operate between Skagway and Haines, and the other between Haines and Juneau. The Malaspina would no longer operate as a summer day boat in the Lynn Canal. Alternative 2 would enhance ferry service without building a road. In that revised alternative, the Malaspina would continue to operate in the summer to provide increased capacity. Enhanced services would also include fare reductions and extended hours of operations for the reservation call center. The rest of the alternatives propose building various road extensions from the Glacier Highway with new shuttle ferries at points north. Those alternatives also eliminate any mainline ferry service north of Auk Bay. The revised alternatives that include a road detail how the shuttle ferries would work in conjunction with new ferry terminals. For example, the East Lynn Canal Highway to Katsaheen alternative says during the summer, one shuttle ferry would make 8 round trips per day between Haines and Katsaheen. A second ferry would make 6 round trips per day between Skagway and Katsaheen. And a Haines-Skagway shuttle ferry would make 2 trips per day. During the winter, only 2 shuttle ferries would be used and the Haines-Skagway route would be eliminated, meaning travelers between the two towns would have to transfer ferries at Katsaheen. In the West Lynn Canal Highway alternative, roads would be built from near Juneau to Berners Bay and from William Henry Bay to the Chilkat Inlet, with a bridge across to Mud Bay Road. Shuttle ferries would run between Berners and William Henry Bays and between Haines and Skagway, with as many as 12 trips in each direction during the summer. The marine alternatives have not changed in the revisions. Those include the use of fast ferries and, in some cases, no shuttle ferries. Those options are not considered to be the favored ones at the DOT. Several residents have suggested the state is moving toward combining the two projects, making one dependent on the other. State officials maintain that's not the case, although it would be unwise to not look at each project in the planning of the other. A day before the updated alternatives were released, Governor Sean Parnell had this to say about the project's association to each other.
Certainly, they can be connected in a person's mind, but when I made the decision to go from a 350-foot vessel, that was done at the time because that design had driven costs up from $120 million for that one vessel to $167 million, and it was still going up from there. And at some point, the chief executive officer of the state has to say, enough. We're not going to pay, you know, tens of millions more than the money that's been appropriated to us by the legislature. So that decision, in when I made it, to say, look, we need alternatives for Alaskans to get their ferry service, and we need to do it with $120 million. That's where we got two smaller Alaska ferry designs from, was from that calculation.
The state plans to issue a draft impact statement in the early part of next year. At that time, state officials may or may not state a preferred alternative. Woodrow says officials could decide to wait until after the public comment period to specify a preference. The Federal Highway Administration does plan to name a preferred alternative in the draft impact statement. A final environmental impact statement on the Juneau Access Project is scheduled to be released in the middle of next year after a public comment period. To see the revised impact statement alternatives, visit the Juneau Access Road Project online at dot.alaska.gov. Apollo Meditrans, a popular medevac insurance company, has its state license back, but it's not quite ready to sign up new customers or renew policies. Fairbanks-based Apollo failed to renew its license earlier this year. That meant it could not operate legally in Alaska. State Insurer Division Director Brett Kolb said that license was approved August 23rd.
There's nothing from the state's perspective and from the perspective of appropriate licensure. There's nothing standing in the way of them doing business.
Apollo charges $125 a year for nationwide air and ground medical evacuation insurance. Its policies have been popular in Alaska because an air ambulance flight can cost tens of thousands of dollars. Apollo Chief Financial Officer Robert Bonestro says the company is close to resuming business.
We're a brokerage firm, so we have a license as a brokerage firm. The company that actually does the backs the insurance product is Unified Life. So what has to happen before we are able to sell again is that we have to get appointed by Unified Life once again.
He says that should happen within about 2 weeks. Bonestro says failing to renew the state license was an administrative mistake.
We just kind of missed it coming up this year. And so what ended up happening is that we had sold policies for a certain period of time after we weren't licensed. And that was what really drug it out quite a long ways.
The state fined Apollo $5,000 for violating Alaska's insurance laws. The company will have to pay a suspended $15,000 fine if it violates those laws during the next 5 years. Some rainfall over the weekend may have eased a looming crisis for pink salmon stocks in southeast Alaska. The summer's fine weather and record salmon runs have both made headlines, but they're a recipe for trouble without enough water in rivers and streams for fish to spawn. KCAW's Robert Woolsey visited Sitka's Indian River to learn how the salmon were doing.
The Indian River is a mid-sized system. It drains a large valley to the east of Sitka, but there are no glaciers or permanent snowpack feeding it. The Indian River is low, and there are more fish in it than I've ever seen. We spook 200 or 300 pink salmon, and they surge away across the shallow gravels, leaving us standing among carcasses. I'm with Dave Gordon, the area management biologist for Fish and Game, and his tech, Jess Coltharp. A stream plugged with salmon is a good thing, but there is a problem. Gordon picks up a pink salmon and cuts it open.
Been dead a long time. There's another one. Yep. Just still in the skein. And obviously didn't die from spawning, died of stress there for some time. So based on that sample, I'd say a high percentage of the mortality you are seeing here is unspawned fish.
Gordon cuts open 5 dead females and all still have eggs, but he's not necessarily alarmed. For these salmon to have survived 2 years in the ocean and then come this far upstream only to die on the banks is not that unusual.
I think you always have a certain amount of stress mortality associated with the spawning event, so you are going to see pre-spawn fish die even in when the water is in better shape than it is here, but I certainly would think that the water quality in this case is definitely adding to the stress a lot and is probably causing a higher number to die before they have a chance to spawn.
Decaying fish rob the stream of oxygen. In a normal year, carcasses are flushed out to sea. Obviously, low rainfall is at the heart of the problem here, but are there also just too many fish?
This is an all-time record for Alaska. Right now, it's something above 250 million fish have returned.
Steve Reifenstuhl is the general manager of the Northern Southeast Regional Aquaculture Association. In this job and in his previous position with a local processor, he's worked closely with the Seine Fleet, whose bread and butter is pink salmon. In Southeast, fishermen have taken nearly 90 million pinks.
We probably left at least 10 million, maybe 20 million pink salmon in the ocean that weren't needed for escapement that could have been harvested if there would have been sufficient process capacity.
But catching those fish, Reifenstuhl says, would have been unrealistic. The industry in Southeast can best handle about 70 million fish.
You know, you can't build infrastructure for a once in 120-year event.
I mean, less fish would have been a good thing at this stage, but there's a lot of systems that are much smaller than this, are much smaller watersheds, are much more dependent on the rainfall to have any water at all, and those are getting desperately low.
Dave Gordon thinks there are probably about three times as many fish in Sitka's Indian River than it can accommodate, and more are holding off the mouth in salt water, waiting for the stream to rise. But they can't hold forever. Enough will make it, though, to maintain this stock. Gordon thinks the system would be at risk of a crash only if dry weather persisted well into September. That's not a very big worry at the moment. Gordon, like any fisheries manager, is worried about taking my call next year.
I think what happens when people see this, and then next year we're going to get something more normal, and they're going to go, where's all the fish? You know.
Reporting on the banks of the Indian River in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
For KHNS News, I'm Margaret Friednauer. Thanks for joining us for your local news on KHNS. We appreciate your support.